All right, some very disappointing news for some of you out there today, because there's been another broad cancellation of driving tests at the Letterkenny Test Centre. A number have been cancelled again this morning, which is a real pain in the backside for those of you who've been waiting potentially up to 8 or 9 months for that, just to get a cancellation at the last moment. If you have been affected by that, get in touch with us, 08660 25000. And I suppose staying in this space, we're learning that the Road Safety Authority could be split into two separate agencies. To tease this out, we're joined by Minister of State for Transport, James Lawless. Good morning, James. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Good to be with you this morning.
Right. So what's on the table here? Why split the Road Safety Authority in two, do you think?
Okay, so look, this has been coming for a while, and I suppose this dates back to the Road Safety Authority is around for 20 years almost. And when it was founded, we had a peak of road deaths. We had at the high 300s, almost 400 in the early 2000s. It's now back to about 151, I think. 150 is the latest stat over the last week. So we're in a much better place. I always say one death is one too many, but it certainly has improved. But there's been peaks and troughs in that time. And over the last couple of years, the trend has begun to reverse in terms of they've been going the wrong direction again in terms of the road fatalities. The other point that I would stress, and it goes back to your opening remarks, we've had consistent failures to deliver basic services like NCTs, driver testing, license issuing, commercial vehicle testing. And they're the bread and butter services that people pay hard-earned money to book in for those services. And they have an expectation to get them on time. Because people are waiting for job interviews, to take up new positions, to get to school, to get to work, to get to wherever they're going, to get on the road. And they really need service levels to be met. So we did a thorough review of the whole operation of the Road Safety Authority this year. One of the first things I took on as minister in this job. And we concluded that they were trying to do too many things at once. So we're splitting the functions into one operational agency, which will manage all of that vehicle testing, NCTs, commercial vehicles, all that important activity, and probably even a little bit more of it coming in, because I'm bringing in a digital dashboard, getting rid of the old paper discs next year. Hopefully we'll be replacing that with a digital sort of logbook. And that, there's a bit of complexity to that, but that will be given to one new agency purely focused on operational matters. And then on the other hand, we're taking that really important road safety advocacy messaging, the ads we see on TV, on our radios, etc., and giving that to a new dedicated entity, which its only job will be to do that. And it will be funded entirely from central funding. So it'll have an independent revenue line. It won't be dependent upon operational performance. And I think we'll see better performance across both arms of the two new entities.
Yeah, one of the concerns of the RSA at the moment was I would have a couple. Firstly, it's losing money hand over fist, right? And the losses are projected to increase in the years ahead. But also, too, I don't think it's healthy when you see an association or an authority having to hire in PR gurus to try and cover up its messes. So I think for most people out there, these changes are long overdue. It should be able to be self-sufficient or take some level of funding, and it certainly shouldn't need to spin its actions.
I completely agree. Look, I think that's a really good point. And I also would think that they're over-reliant on outsourcing. A lot of the core functions are outsourced to various third-party providers. And really, what is the agency itself doing? You'd have to ask. It's hiring PR agencies to cover up from some of its failures and try to mitigate the negative press that it's getting. And then it's sort of outsourcing key functions, the service, customer service, to other companies. So what's left? Is there a thin layer in the middle? And what is that doing? So look, I really think that the new structure, and one of the things that I've really stressed, taking the operational side first, there has to be a real focus on operational excellence and operational efficiencies. And I would hope that the new board will have a couple of people, and as long as I'm in this role, I'll be working towards that, and my successor presumably will have the same approach, I hope, to put in people with operational backgrounds, management backgrounds, contract management backgrounds that can really get on top of this and start delivering. And then equally, it frees up the road safety messaging piece. And that's
which I think really is something that needs to be looked at, because, you know, with all due respect, there's been people involved in that aren't necessarily resonating with the young people. Let me put it like that. And, you know, we have the shock and awe ads, and that's grand, and hopefully have an impact. It's hard to measure. But we also need to reach certain demographics in the spaces that they are. So you can run an advert on Highland Radio you know, about road safety. But with the best will in the world, is that reaching a 16 or a 17-year-old? It's not just the legal drivers, it's the young ones on tractors or quads or what have you. And I just think, you know, it needs to be, have people involved that understand how you reach the people that you reach need to reach. And in one campaign, it could be older generations, by the way. I'm not lumping all this on young people, but it just seems they've got one thing. How shocking can an ad be? And after that, the ideas pool tends to run dry a little bit. So you would hope if it was a dedicated agency that's got a broad representation that they would be able to, you know, do even more to try and reach the people that need to be reached.
No, that's such an important point as well. And one of the things that I've stressed in this, and Minister Raymond Ryan, to be fair, has fully backed me up on this, we need to have a research component there. So there's somebody behind the ads actually looking and saying, well, who do we need to get this message to? You mentioned younger persons, and I agree, look, it's old and young and everyone in between. But there is a trend of younger male drivers on rural roads. Would account for a significant number of collisions. And look, we can all imagine a friend, a cousin, a neighbour, you know, maybe ourselves at one stage in life, you know, taking that shortcut, you know, speeding home perhaps on a back road, and it's not appropriate and it's not safe. So that's an example of one cohort that we need to find a new channel to get to them. Also, I suppose being a bit more positive about it, there are new opportunities from technology. So technology is a huge distraction and people using the phone at the wheel, it takes their eye off the road. But there are things we can do. So iPhones, for example, I think Androids are the same. Most modern smartphones actually come with a setting you can flick to say, when I'm driving, and it can detect that on Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or whatever, turn off notifications. At the moment, you have to go into your settings, browse, find it, and turn it on.
Yeah, I hear you. I know what you're saying, James. But, you know, you get into a car now, an electric car that was produced today, your phone screen's 6.56 inches. You know, the screens in the car go from one end of the cabin to the other, and your notifications are popping up left, right, and center. So I'm not in any way diminishing your point or what have you. But if we're talking about distracted driving, when are we going to have a conversation about all of these flashing symbols and screens right across in front of the driver?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I've asked my team in the department, the technical team, to prepare a paper for me on that, which they've done. So there's a number of ways we can use technology. It can be a threat in terms of distraction, but it can also be an opportunity if we can work with the car manufacturers and new designs to manage it in a safe way. And that is an issue. And it's one of the things, I met driving instructors yesterday. There's a number of different groups that represent driving instructors. And one of the things that come up in the discussion, and they're doing their best to try to, I suppose they want to have a new message to give to their students. But really, the curriculum hasn't changed from 20 years ago. And the car that I learned to drive in would have been a diesel manual car, you know, back in the day. No, you know, certainly no GPS, no dashboard, you know, a couple of lights on the bonnet in front of me. Now the car we get into, it could be electric, it could be automatic, very possibly. It has a very complicated dashboard. It has an inbuilt GPS. It's nearly literally talking to you, giving you prompts. So the curriculum hasn't changed in that time for driving tests, etc. So we need to bring that into the 21st century. And we also need to say that this new RSA, whatever they're going to be called, has to be doing kind of radar scanning all the time. You know, and what's here, not even in the future, what's here now? And are we working with the technology? Are we taking account of new trends, the way people live, the way people drive, the way people use their phones? All those different things, and saying, is the messaging, is it the right message to the right audience, delivered in the right way?
I presume you heard a lot of, and it's interesting actually that you had that meeting with driving instructors. I think that was quite some time coming, if I'm not mistaken, from previous interviews. They want some of the red tape for them to be removed, if my memory serves me correctly. They're taken off the road for what they're doing because they're having to pay to retest themselves, and they want some reform where they can have more of an impact. And also, too, many of those testers do 10 lessons with someone, and they know themselves and their best place to know that that person's not fit to drive, right? It's not, certainly not fit yet to drive. I'm not sure what the basis of that conversation you had with them. I'm presuming you touched on all of that. And do you see an increased role in actually getting safer drivers on the road quicker through instructors?
I do very much so. Like, I think the instructors, there's a couple hundred of them around the country, and they're, I suppose, the first line of defence in terms of getting new people trained up and getting good habits on the road at the start. A couple of things come out of that. There is I think every 2 years, there's what they call a tech test to make sure you're still capable of providing that instruction. I'd like to go a little bit further than that and say, what about what we call the CPD, continuing professional development? In many, many jobs now, you know, when the area you're working changes, you go back for a kind of refresher every 2 years. So the tech test at the moment is quite basic. I think we could actually, we can improve it and make it more relevant. And things like that, technology, things like new driving patterns, new speed limits, new signs, you know, new trends in driving, they could all be part of the curriculum so that when an instructor is going to teach today's new drivers about the modern electric, automatic, technology adapted vehicle, that they know and they're not taking the same approach as they took 20, 25 years ago.
They should look at the lesson as well, because, you know, in the lesson, you know, you don't parallel park as part of your lesson in this country. You don't parallel park.
That's obvious in some shopping centres.
I think it is. Struggling. But you don't, there's no training. There's no training in terms of driving in icy, frosty weather. The tests are often cancelled. There's no testing in Donegal. In Donegal, there's no reference to motorways. You never try and you haven't motorways. You don't drive in the dark.
No, absolutely. So that thing, we discussed those items as well. And that point was actually made about motorways. So if you're in the Northwest, for example, you're probably not too close to a motorway. You may not have the opportunity, unless you really travel a bit of a distance, to get onto one. So
people do their, sorry to cut across you. People do their driving tests in Donegal Town. There's not a single set of traffic lights in Donegal Town.
Okay.
Not one single. So you could get someone to go into the, now. There's a set of traffic lights outside one school, right? But if the school's off, they're not on. So you could go in to Donegal Town, do your driving tests. You don't have to parallel park. You don't have to engage with traffic lights. You don't have to engage with the zebra crossing. You don't have to parallel park. Did I mention that? You don't drive at night. You don't have any test in terms of driving if you lose control of the car. Flat planing or whatever it's called, water planing. It's crazy. And then you're given a license for the rest of your life to head off and drive anywhere in the country or Europe for that matter. Now, I know how hard it is to get across the line, so I don't want to pee off any young people waiting to sit their test. But is that, when we're not doing such basic things like that, it does make you wonder.
Yeah, so look, I think the curriculum should be updated. And I think to be fair, that they're constantly working on it. I think there's a new curriculum due out probably by the end of this year. But for example, the difference between rural driving and urban driving isn't really emphasised in the current test. I did my own test around the streets of Nice. I actually don't think I ever went on a motorway, even though we have two of them running quite close to me here. But driving on rural roads or driving on urban roads, there's quite a difference. And things like parallel parking that you mentioned, also things like making progression, you know, the old thing that you're not too slow, not too fast. That's a difficult balance to get, but it has to be taught, I think, at the start. And the old observation, I remember being driven into me when I was taking my test way back, you must keep an eye around the corner. You don't know when a football is going to come over a ditch or when somebody's going to step out in front of a crossing, you know, or when a tractor is going to come around the corner, perhaps in a rural setting. These are things that are key. So the driving instructors, to be fair to them, they've come up with 30 different modules. At the moment, there's 12 hours required. And they're saying, their suggestion is, and I think people might be a bit worried if they heard, you know, you have to do 30 lessons instead of doing 12, because 12 could be enough.
Yeah, but the state could fund some of those. You know,
the cost is one thing, but even the hours involved, you know, I know people setting out to drive 12 hours seems like a lifetime away, but 30 hours might be even more daunting. But the way they're pitching it is, rather than having that as an additional time, the current syllabus requires you to do a couple of hours sort of practice in between each lesson anyway. So you do 1 hour with the driver, 3 hours with your parent or friend or brother or sister or whatever, that's a fully qualified driver. So that could be spent using some of the secondary modules. So we can do this stuff without adding extra time or cost to the students. And I think it's something that we need to focus on.
Okay, we'll see.
With an election coming soon, I may not be in this ministry for much longer, but I'm glad to have started the ball rolling.
Right, okay, we'll see. Just in relation to that, because you started the ball rolling on getting rid of the paper off a windscreen, we're already getting post-COVID limited access to be able to go in person and re-taxi car and stuff, and people like the idea of that. They like the letter postal reminders. Can you ease any concerns from this one particular listener who's afraid that the desk service and phone service will be lost and reminders will come via email, i.e. we could leave a sizable tranche of society behind that, like the physical element to it?
Yeah, well, look, I think people can still go into the local motor tax office, you know, or go into the department office, whatever, or the local council office to have that transaction. Possibly the post office may be counter available to that service as well. But I think inevitably we will move it online. It saves millions to the taxpayer in terms of postage, in terms of printing those discs. It's a lot easier for Gardaí when they're scanning at the moment, and they have technology-enabled Garda cars and sort of speed vans. And one of the benefits of going digital is that you could have a driver who's disqualified, who has multiple penalty points, who maybe is off the road for dangerous driving, uninsured. They're driving through a town. They might get out around the corner and kill somebody. Whereas if the digital logbook is there, a Garda car can actually spot them right away and actually pull them in. At the moment, the Garda car would have to be in front of that windscreen, pulling them over, studying the disc, and putting it back through to the office. So that's very...
So it gives the tax and registration. Other thing, if by some chance you end up in the same ministry or have the ear of someone that does, and even maybe it's not your remit, but pass it on to someone, please stop penalising us with less money for taxing our cars for 3 or 6 months. Often it's done because A, we don't know if we're going to keep the car. B, it can't be transferred. C, it's because of financial reasons, because we're being taxed off the road left, right and centre between diesel and petrol and everything else. It's payment to the state. Just charge us for 3 months and it being 12 a year divided by 12 multiplied by 3. Stop penalising us for paying in parts.
I completely get that point. It's very fair, and I know myself that for the exact same reasons, I rarely tax my car more than maybe 6 months at the most, because I'm always thinking, well, you know, it's due a change. I actually never get around to changing it, but I'm always thinking, well, I might or I should. But I suppose, to be fair to the state and to the department, it costs the same amount to tax a car in terms of the person that has to process that application, that has to log it into the system, that has to load up on the computer, put in the details, refresh it, etc.
Much of that. Come here. If I tax my car, there's no one sitting there typing anything in. Surely to God.
Well, there won't be with the digital logbook.
And they won't print out my disc and sign it themselves and send it off. I'm sure much of that's automated. But look, that's fine. But why punish us? Because we can't afford to do it for a year. All right, James, listen, good luck in the elections, as I would say to anyone who puts their name forward in front of the people. And thanks for joining us today. Take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
That's Minister of State for Transport, James Lawless there. This split in the RSA seems like a waste of money. We have huge problems of too many agencies doing 6 different parts of what one agency could accomplish if managed correctly. But the reason why this one seems to make a bit of sense to me is because I don't see a great connection between getting your NCT and sorting that stuff out and getting that right, getting us appointments, maybe even allowing garages that do the services to do NCTs like they do MOTs in Britain, for an example, and also putting adverts on the radio to try and make people drive safely. I think they're two different things and maybe might be better served by, hopefully, not two agencies that cost double, but doing it correctly anyway. I'm a retired Garda sergeant. Fatalities on the road are futile without rules being enforced. A few days after a collision, people are doing the same bad old tricks again. I think that enforcement's only being enforced on a 5 out of 10 scale. That's coming from someone from the force. Thanks for that. Read the new discs for car windows, and I'll put this view to to our guest there. Will this mean that I, as an older person, will have to apply for my car tax and NCT online only? Will the desk service and phone service be lost? Will I get reminders in the post, or will it be via email? Hopefully you got the answer there from the minister. Maybe that was enough for you. All right, we'll be back with more after these. Right, it is Wellness Wednesday time now, and we're going to return to the issue of lung health because... we're in the midst of promoting lung health awareness. We talked about this last week and some things that are available for people with COPD and asthma and what have you about lung exercises and exercising to help sort of either stop things worsening or improve the situation depending on the condition. Dr. Catherine Finan is respiratory consultant and council member of the Irish Thoracic Society. Good morning to you. Thank you very much indeed, Catherine. Is it Finan or Finan?
Good morning.
I beg your pardon.
Finan.
Finan. I got it right. Okay. Brilliant stuff. You Catherine, you're very welcome to the show. Thanks so much for your time.
Not at all. Thanks for having me.
Right. Okay. The scale of those living with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, it's huge, isn't it? An estimated 380,000 people. Another close on 500,000, 450,000 people with living with doctor-diagnosed asthma. 2,700 people being diagnosed with lung cancer each year. I mean, you know, those are startling figures when they're all put together like that, aren't they, Catherine?
They are indeed, and I suppose this is why we try and promote lung health, particularly at this time of the year, because a lot of people are focused on managing their lung health through the winter time. And we know that certainly infections are something that can precipitate exacerbations of both asthma and COPD. So avoiding infections is really important for people with those conditions, particularly at this time of the year.
I think it's difficult to get the public, the wider public, me for an example, and others, to see the connection between poor air and respiratory conditions. I think it sort of gets lost in our right to burn turf or something. I don't know what the reason is, Catherine, but there seems to be almost a pushback on much of this being avoidable, if that makes sense.
Well, certainly there is. I think that we can probably see the connection more between car fumes and pollution from heavy industry. And we're all very aware that, you know, that happens over there someplace else. But when it's in our own backyard and we have to think about what do we burn in our fires, what do we put into our cars, how can I make the air better for me and everybody else around me to breathe? And so there are some things that we suggest that people think about, like opening your windows during the daytime to sort of clear the air in your house and to change the air in it, particularly after you've been cooking or if you've been having a shower or if you're drying your clothes inside. Thinking about the type of wood that you're burning and to try and burn only dry, untreated wood because there are less toxins that come off that. The smoke is slightly cleaner. Being sure that you've installed your smoke alarms and your carbon monoxide alarms to make your home as safe as possible. And then to think about not ever, ever smoking inside is really important, not only for older people, but also for very small children and young children, that they shouldn't be exposed to smoke or vape if possible.
Obviously, we have to think about those that are affected by some of the conditions I mentioned earlier, but also there's a great pressure on the health system. And we have a really high incidence of respiratory related admissions to Letterkenny University Hospital, for an example. So what should we be doing proactively, obviously in the first instance to keep people as healthy as possible for longer, but also obviously even maybe spending a little now to save money down the line in terms of healthcare and to give people longer, but also really quite importantly, healthier lives?
The most important thing is not to smoke or vape. And so that doesn't really cost people anything. In fact, that might save people money in the long run.
I beg your pardon, Catherine. I sort of meant in terms of what the state could be doing in terms, I don't know, I think your organisation advocates for screening, a screening program, for an example.
Yeah. Well, so there are different levels of lung screening. We certainly, there's been a very big push through the HSE for community hub development pulmonary function testing. And that's where GPs can directly access pulmonary function testing for patients that they may be concerned that have COPD or asthma. Then the other condition that we would think about perhaps is a screening program for lung cancer. Now, this isn't an international program, a recommended program as yet, but the ITS is certainly advocating for a low-dose CT scan for people who would have high risk for lung cancer. That's not everybody, but would be quite expensive to run that. So there's obviously a lot of health economics that need to be considered before that would be implemented.
Yeah, you talked about obvious stuff that we can do, and I say obvious, but, you know, no smoking, no vaping. We often only consider what goes out the chimney in terms of solid fuels, and you've given us some advice in relation to that. Much of that we as individuals are in control of. What is the situation in our workplaces and in terms of our exposure to air pollution in those spaces? And is there a role here for employers to look at?
Certainly workplace where we spend a lot of our time and we're breathing the air around where we're working. So it's important that employers would have cognizance over air quality within their departments. And there is a European service that can be accessed to sort of assess your air quality at work. I'm not sure that is very well used. Certainly that could be used. I think, again, it's the simple things about, you know, making sure the air is changed as much as possible. So that's like opening windows, having air exchangers, maybe air purifiers in certain environments, and making sure it's not damp and things like that.
And also, too, there's kind of an interesting tip for taking a breath of clean air. Obviously, exercise is great, right, isn't it? It's exercising our lungs. But you're advising people, and you do see it all the time, if they are out for a run or a walk and they live in an urban area or intend to do it on the side of a road, as many do, is to consider whether or not it's rush hour.
Rush hour would certainly have a very high intensity of air pollutants. And so that would be probably advised to avoid it if possible, or if you can include some less urban environment in your run would be possible. You know, we live in the northwest of Ireland, so there's lots of places to run where we can run through trees and woods and beside lakes, rivers and beaches. So I think where we live, we're probably spoiled for choice in terms of being able to try and run in good, clean air.
Just one question on vaping. I mean, I don't have the statistics, but a lot of young people vape. I would say there's more people vape now than ever smoked. And at one time it was seen as a lesser of two evils for smokers. I think also too, and this is not science based, I think we know less about the dangers of vaping than we actually know, right? And you're already saying if you vape, you know, when you want good lung health, then quit. How concerned are you as to what could be coming down the tracks in terms of when we fully get the impact of what breathing this burning sort of chemical into our lungs, deep into our lungs, might have on the population?
So I suppose if we look back 70, 80 years ago, when smoking became incredibly popular, doctors were actually advocating for people to smoke to try and encourage cough and airway clearance. And this is how sort of medical science and information and research becomes available across time. We're at the very beginning, I think, of the story of vaping. And I think that while we can show some very short-term negative impacts on lung function following vaping, we don't know really what the long-term impacts are going to be. But we know that for anything pollutant that we've breathed into our lungs, whether it's cigarette smoke, whether it's petrol fumes, whether it's any other kind of industrial things like asbestos, these all cause us problems down the line, but it can take many, many years for it to be found through research.
Okay.
So I don't think we can wait. We can't wait to for that research to be available to say don't do this.
All right, Dr. Catherine Finan, thank you very much for your time. A respiratory consultant there. 086 60 25,000, your WhatsApps and texts. And my word, you have kept us really busy on the phones today. I still have dozens of messages, many I hope to get through between now and 12. But we're also going to have some business news for you very shortly, because Chris Ashmore is coming in to preview the Business Matters podcast, but of course also to run through some of the big business stories from the region over the last week. Okay, so that means it's time to say good morning to Chris Ashmore in studio with me for Business Matters. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you on board. Right, let's get to some news. And always interesting to hear of development, construction and planning. Lovely. And I hope now as we go forward, we'll get the updates on, you know, work beginning and what have you. But some interesting developments on the cards.
Yes, just a couple to note. A planning application has been lodged with Donegal County Council for the development of 32 student apartments near on Green and Theatre, so in the heart of Letterkenny. And of course, there is a big student accommodation shortfall at the moment, so I don't know how long that whole process may take to get through, but it's in the pipeline, as they say. And down in Ballyshannon, Council has given planning permission for 34 new residential units, a mixture of semi-detached houses and apartments and even some terraced houses as well. So I think, as you'll be aware, Greg, even around Letterkenny, we're seeing cranes popping up again. So yeah, always it's a sign of more activity.
It
definitely.
Is quite interesting to see that. I wonder, do we know if it's who's lodged the application for the student accommodation?
Yes, it's the applicant is M&B Kelly, who have an address in Mount Charles.
All right, okay. Interesting. Breakfast seminar coming up on Thursday.
Yes, just to mention this tomorrow, there's a breakfast seminar being organised by Leanra Letterkenan in conjunction with Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce. And it's called Identity and Authenticity in Business, Making the Irish Language Work for You. Now, it's going to be presented by Finbar Bradley, who he teaches at the Smurfit Business School at UCD, a former professor of finance at DCU, and he set up the Irish Medium Innovation Centre called Fiontar. So a keen supporter of the Irish language, and that breakfast seminar will be taking place at Kernan's in the retail park in Letterkenny from 8 o'clock. And you can register by going to either the Letterkenny Chamber website or the Leanra website for that.
All right, Donegal on the telly.
Yes, last night, I don't know, some people may have seen on TG Cahir, a series called Moving West is back on our screens, presented by Mary Kennedy. And last night's episode had a look at Donegal, a lot of footage of Donegal, and highlighting the story of Teresa Noel Mullany, who moved to the Fanad Peninsula from Monaghan. Teresa's now a tour guide at Fanad Lighthouse. They also looked at Kevin Sexton, who has returned to Donegal from being in the United States, and all very positive stuff. A nice exposure for the county. It's a positive series.
Okay, well, yeah. Just with that in mind, too, just to mark your diary, TG Cahir tonight have a show on at 9:30 p.m. and it's focusing on the defective concrete block issue. A regular guest on this show, Dr. Andreas Lehman, will be part of that programme as well. So always good to see that issue getting highlighted. I think journalist Kevin McGee is responsible for that TG Cahir show. And also RTE cameras were at the school in Milford. They're seeking a new site, of course. We had them on for an hour on this show last week or the week before. I don't know if that airs this evening or not, but two big issues in Donegal. Getting the national spotlight. Credit where it's due, Chris. You know what I mean? If you criticise them when they ignore you, and in fairness to TG Cahir, they do extensive coverage of Donegal. But you know what I mean? If you're critical, you have to be fair, don't you? If you're critical when you feel things aren't getting the coverage, you then have to celebrate when they do, because that's what being fair is all about. Okay.
Yeah. And just on that, just mentioned in Farming News last week, Stephen Robb from Newton Cunningham is one of the presenters now on the Ear to the Ground programme, which is very popular farming and rural affairs. Very watchable programme.
All right, what's coming up, Chris? Anything we should take
just
note
of? A couple of dates for the diary, as they say. There's a business support clinic this Friday from 10 o'clock. It's all online. You can just go to the local enterprise site and find out more about that. So it's a good way of just finding out what's out there. And also just advance notice, the Donegal Women in Business Network, which has close on 300 members, they've already announced details. Their Christmas lunch is on the 9th of December down in Harvey's Point.
Right, okay. The Business Matters podcast is released to you on our website every Wednesday morning. It's in the Listen Back section. It'll be populated in the news section for a couple of hours until it's replaced by other stories. So it's available for you right now to stream or download. What's coming up, Chris?
Well, in this week's programme, I've been speaking with John Duffy, who, along with Laura McGarren, run a regenerative organic farm near Church Hill. Now, they have a number of income streams. They hold events on their farm. And really, from a business perspective, what's very interesting is they're on the New Frontiers. John's on the New Frontiers programme and has plans for a unique protein bar using dehydrated organic beef or indeed venison. So a pure natural protein bar. And as he says in the clip you're about to hear, you know, a lot of the protein bars we buy in the shops, yes, they're full of protein, but very highly processed. So this could be something that could tick a lot of boxes.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to reconnect people with real food. And we've developed this concept for a, you might be familiar with protein bars that you might come across in the, at like supermarket tills or at the petrol station when you call in for a tank of diesel. And what we've noticed is that there's a gap in the market there for a real food protein bar. So a lot of these are kind of highly ultra processed bars that contain a lot of kind of ingredients that you would find difficult to pronounce in terms of emulsifiers, preservatives, extenders and sweeteners. And we're looking to deliver to the market a bar that is ultimately a dehydrated meat product that is shelf stable, convenient, and it's a way for us really to connect this real high value, high quality protein source that we have in the forms of beef from our upland regenerative farming systems, but also potentially venison as well from the west of Ireland, into a product that people can really value and get behind whilst trying to achieve their lifestyle, fitness and health goals.
Interesting. I'm not conflating two products, but it sounds they're in the same space as that Pepperami product, which has been around. It's probably completely different. And as I say, I don't want to, if that's seen as a negative towards this new developed product, I don't want to sort of conflate them. But it's the only other time I can remember or would be aware of a meat being in a consumable product like that, Chris. Anyway, that's just one string to the bro, to the bow. Full interview. Anything else you want to add about that company? Or
well, you know, just to, through the New Frontiers program, this is a great example of how he's getting mentors and expert advice of how to bring a potential product into the marketplace, and all going well, we could see these organic protein bars being produced next year.
Yeah, organic element of it too, really important. Okay, so listen to the full interview with John Duffy on our podcast right now. It's available, as I mentioned, to stream or download, but it's also broadcast on Sunday, Chris.
That's right, after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. And if you want to contact me, best way is by email. So it's businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Bit snoozy today. You watched a bit of the politics last night, did you?
Yeah, I went to bed a bit late. Should have gone to bed earlier and got up earlier.
The writing was on the wall going to bed.
Yeah.
But also too, I woke up and listened to the radio for half an hour. Twice, and the second time it was clear. Yeah. And then on the way to work, he's given his welcome speech. Mm. Everyone sort of said it would take ages, even Barack Obama.
Yeah, took us by surprise.
And I say even Barack Obama, you'd expect as a former president to know. Even he was saying, like, this could go deep, this could take ages. And as it turns out, all done and dusted in terms of result.
Yeah, let's hope another general election here, a little bit closer to home, moves as swiftly. And
yeah,
they don't
well, that's
have our
it.
Recounts. And
let's hopefully people, I want to see the same level of engagement. That's what I'm trying to encourage. And hopefully we can use this show for that, that people, you know, tease it out. Let's have some conversations. You know, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael are bad, Sinn Féin are bad. You know what I mean? And that's fine. But let's get our heads together and figure out why you think they are or why you don't think they are. And, you know, it's going to be Friday, the 29th of November, voting on Saturday. We're all going to be down the Oyre Leisure Centre. And, things could move quite quickly. Five seats, no sorting, everything all in the one place. Chris, no referendi.
And I always look forward to Donal Kavanagh saying that the count is imminent.
Indeed.
And, you know, just one other point, you know, should voting be compulsory? It is in some countries.
I don't know.
It's an interesting point.
I mean, sometimes not voting is your vote as well.
You
know, if you would compel everyone to vote and someone wants to say, you know what, I'm sick of the system, it's a permanent government runs this
still
country.
Spoil it.
You know, why should I vote people up there to go on the gravy train because they all end up the same? You know, why would you compel someone to have a point of view if that is, in fact, their point of view?
It may make them look into things in a little bit more detail. And maybe vote for the person who... You know, it's
why
not always the person you want, the person you least
lesser,
want.
Why force people to vote for the lesser of evils? Yeah. If you believe the system is corrupt and broken, you know, and you can be well considered in that, you could have done your research, you could have formulated that opinion, and you say, you know what, stuff it, I ain't voting anyone onto that gravy train.
Or you
that
could
in
start
and of itself is the only thing is you can't count it because you can't judge the 40-odd% who might not vote or less as pacifists or that's the decision they made. Or just can't be bothered. Do you know what I mean? Or feel disenfranchised. We can't break that down, so it's hard to know.
And another one just comes up periodically when you have a long ballot paper with lots of names on it. They have done research that alphabetically, when it goes to the preferences, you are better off being near the top.
Here?
So
top?
Do we have the circular ballot paper and then it's... Totally
yeah, well,
fair.
The EU one was a joke. What, 28 names, two foot long?
Yeah, folding it over, yeah.
You know, I like me politics, but bloody hell, that's asking an awful lot. Who's alphabetically top here? G, Gallagher, Bradley. Nicky's will be top. Nicky Bradley will be top, will she?
Be the top, yeah.
Well, there you go. We'll see if that makes a difference. Chris, if Zelda was running, she'd be last, but... Zelda doesn't exist. All right then, Chris, I'll bid you adieu. Thank you very much for coming in, and we'll chat to you, all being well, Wednesday, if God spares us.
Thank you, Greg.
So caller asks, what about certain plants that release oxygen in the air? Does your guest believe they help with air quality for people with respiratory conditions? I don't know the ins and outs of it, but what logic would dictate to me is that there's plenty of oxygen in the air. It's the pollution within. It's pollution within that oxygen. Would the oxygen from a plant dilute it or remove it? Possibly not on a scale that would make any difference. But as I say, I'm only trying to use logic there. I don't know. Can this air fryer be spoken to Was there a discussion on Highland Radio this morning that you shouldn't speak to the air fryer as it listened to Alexia? Please settle this debate for me. Well, it depends on the air fryer. Currently, as farmers are aware, the air fryer means you could just monitor on your phone what the situation is in terms of the progress of cooking, so as not as to open and close the drawer and lose heat. I don't believe, I mean, I open the drawer, shake, put, close it, open the drawer, have a look, close it. I don't think it makes any material difference. But people like smart stuff. I'm not sure if it's integration with Alexia or Google for that matter. I have a lot of smart stuff. Smart air fryer, just not on my list at the moment. In regards to grants for League of Ireland clubs, Finn Harps got nothing. Sligo Rovers got 16 million, even though they've their own grounds. Finn Harps don't have their own ground yet. We got nothing. A number of football clubs in Dublin also got millions. I believe that this is all a tactic for the election. Hi, Greg. Regarding the decision to once again ignore the needs of the people of North West and deny funding to Buncrana Swimming Pool, this comes as no surprise, as it's just another nail in a long list of rebukes paralysing the socio-economic growth of the lives of the North Western community by countless governments. I will be attending this meeting on Tuesday and look forward to it. Yep, I mean, they would argue we didn't neglect the North West because we gave money to the ATU in Letterkenny. The one thing we've waiting on clarification from the council, because it was cited from the government minister that one of the favourable elements for the ATU project is it was the priority project for the Donegal County Council. So we're very keen to sort of get clarity on that position from the council. Were they ranked from the council going to government? Because as I say, that was stated, and I think it's a critical piece of information. The world's never been in such turmoil, says the listener, not in a long time, when we are all supposed to be the safest, healthiest and wealthiest ever. All governments have failed their people. They should be removed and charged with treason and crimes against their own residents. Greed and corruption is prevalent. It's an absolute disgrace, comes in from Sinead there. Greg, you made one sure and certain statement. The world's heading downhill fast. Me, much faster than most people realise. Another Biden was lying when he said he was the only one to beat Trump. Trump has clearly run away with this election. The Democrats messed this up. Can't wait to see the promised exodus from America of celebrity backers of Harris and poor Kamala. What a shame after making all these plans to redecorate the White House. Okay, so who influences people? This is a really interesting point, right? So you had some of the biggest artists out there at the moment. Taylor Swift, apparently a god. What she says goes. She endorsed Kamala Harris, made no difference. Charlie CXE endorsed her, made no difference. Jennifer Lopez endorsed her, made no difference. I could continue if the names would come to me, with dozens and dozens of celebrity Hollywood, you know, the great actors, the great musicians, all backing Kamala Harris. And what difference did it make? Not a pip. She couldn't even do as well as Joe Biden did. Oprah Winfrey, another. These are apparently some of the most influential people in the world. So who are the influencers then? Because they couldn't make a difference in that election. Not at all. In fact, the Democrats regressed with all of that celebrity endorsement. Even a favourable appearance on Saturday Night Live, one of the most popular shows on a Saturday evening, had no material impact. Just a comment about the toilet facilities at Nairn Beach. As a new caretaker has taken over this year, and I've noticed that doors on... Well, I'll come back to that. Just because it could relate to one particular individual, I'll come back and we'll double check that. And I haven't ignored it, right? But I have to be careful not to identify someone. We'll come back to that. My 7-year-old daughter hurt her ankle yesterday and was badly swollen and bruised. Went to NOWDOC and was sent to A&E. 10 hours she was finally seen. Got an x-ray done, given a boot and sent home at 6 a.m. this morning. Everyone exhausted at 9 a.m. The hospital rang. The x-ray's corrupted and they need to read it. They said they've to book another appointment for next Tuesday in the fracture clinic. An absolute disgrace of a hospital. I heard people sent home, told everything was all clear, came back, broken back. Where does this leave Hollywood? Oh, this is the point I've just made. Where does this leave Hollywood and their influence? Where does it leave all the giant donors who poured the money into the Harris campaign? Proof that these so-called influencers have no place in the real world. Look at... I think it's probably a majority of people that want to dial things back a little bit in the world. And they don't agree with a lot of maybe the ideology or ethos of those in certain areas of the arts, okay? So I think that's a strong message that's been sent out there. Hi, Greg. The cheerleaders of Trump would do well to take heed that he is a convicted felon, a convicted sexual predator. I'm not sure was he convicted of that. A dictator in waiting, a close friend ally of Putin, Netanyahu. He will expedite the extermination of the Palestinians. He'll give Putin the green light to hold Crimea and annex the Donbass region and to invade Georgia, Moldova at his leisure. So be careful for what you wish for. Certainly, I never wished for anything. But anyway, there you go. Thank you for all of that. What a busy, busy show. We really do appreciate it. We're back with you, of course, tomorrow morning, bright and early from 9. But for me, Greg Hughes and the team, stay safe.